You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Today's text is from the compact and intense book of Amos. Not a book you often hear preached from, mainly, I think, because it's hard to spiritualize away into feel-good platitudes. The words of Amos are hard-hitting, and in every sense of the heaviness of the word, prophetic. We have a pretty accurate sense of the circumstances that gave rise to this harsh critique of society. The adjacent Jewish kingdoms of Judah and Israel are at the zenith of what for them is one of the longest stretches of peace and prosperity in their collective history. But all is not well. As it turns out, the immense economic prosperity of these regimes was made possible mainly by official policies and cultural norms that disenfranchised the poor and destroyed the equivalent of the middle class. Secondly, those in leadership weren't paying attention, but the brutal and powerful Assyrians were about to launch an aggressive territorial expansion that clearly posed an existential threat to the Jewish kingdoms. So as you hear our text today, be thinking about it first being spoken to a society living in a bubble of extravagance, numbness, and denial. Imagine a culture not that different from our own, indifferent to internal injustices and ignorant of the complexities of rising external threats. Enter Amos, who, speaking the words of the Lord, sounds the alarm to try and warn a society that is somewhere between a drunken stupor and fast asleep, unaware that their self-indulgence and failure to care for the disadvantaged and excluded is about to come to a painful end.
Our words of wisdom today are from Amos chapter 5, verses 10 through 14. They hate the one who reproves in the gate, and they abhor the one who speaks the truth.
Therefore, because you trample on the poor and take from them levies of grain, you have built houses of hewn stone, but you shall not live in them. You've planted pleasant vineyards, but you shall not drink their wine.
For I know how many are your transgressions and how great are your sins, and who afflict the righteous and who take the bribe and push aside the needy in the gate.
Therefore, the prudent will lament in such a time, for it is an evil time.
Seek good and not evil, that you may live, and so the Lord, the God of hosts, will be with you just as you have said. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
Last week I mentioned that the Fountains has a bit of a reputation in the community. For some, it's a beacon of hope. For others, it's an ever-present threat. The pastor of one of our neighboring churches has declared me the primary proponent of an apostate religious movement, a badge I wear with honor. And what's strange is that this so-called apostate religious movement, of which I'm a proponent, just happens to be inspired by the words and witness of a guy named Jesus of Nazareth. Someone who went out of his way to welcome and affirm the lives of his poor, downtrodden, and excluded fellow human beings, who reached out to and spoke out on behalf of women, non-Jews, criminals, traitors, the unclean. So it hasn't seemed to me to be off-brand to welcome and affirm all people at the Fountains, to create interfaith dialogue and relationships with Muslims, Jews, and Mormons, to celebrate and lift up the principles of science and evolution, to advocate for reforming our broken immigration system and declare ourselves a reconciling community, thereby welcoming and affirming our LGBTQ neighbors. There's been some pushback from some in the community. You'll recall the Fact or Fiction campaign a few years back. But for the most part, the people of the Fountains itself have risen to the challenge of striving to put love first in all we do. So in the face of all that has transpired in 2020 so far, it didn't seem out of character for us to remind people of our values by putting up a banner back in June that stated, "We believe." It's not unusual for us to get an occasional threatening phone call at the office, and we did get several after putting up this banner. I spent quite a bit of time on the phone with one neighbor who was in a panic because she was convinced that the banner was proof of our advocating the violent Marxist overthrow of society. Okay. Let me be more specific. She was concerned about the violent Marxist overthrow of white society. Why? Because our banner states that we believe that Black lives matter. Look, I can say, remember the Alamo? And people, especially Texans, will say, hear, hear. I can say of 9/11, never forget. Or join with my Jewish brothers and sisters and say of the Holocaust, we remember. But for this woman and many others to say Black Lives Matter is tantamount to starting a fight. Think about it this way. If you saw a gathering of middle-aged white men with signs that read, "Altar Boys Lives Matter," would you be offended at their anti-Catholic sentiments and say, "No, you've got to say Catholic Lives Matter"? Why are they so anti-church? If you were at a Holocaust memorial and saw people with signs that said, "Jewish lives matter," would you object and say, "No, all lives matter"? As the pandemic scythes through the elderly in care facilities across the country, we would be right to put up a sign that said, "Senior citizens' lives matter," wouldn't we? It doesn't mean that we don't think the children matter. Or a painful reality in our own United Methodist Church. If you saw a gathering of women clergy with signs that said, "Female pastors' lives matter," would you think, "Huh, those men haters, all pastors matter"? No. In every one of those situations, there is very real hurt stemming from very real events that make each one of these groups feel like it's necessary to remind people that their lives matter. Not to the exclusion of other lives, but to bring attention to their particular plight. Black people hear that Americans are to never forget Pearl Harbor and 9/11, and that Jews are to never forget the Holocaust. But if American blacks bring up slavery, the failure of Reconstruction, lynching, Jim Crow, the violent repression of voting rights in the South in the 1960s, or today's mass incarceration of people of color, not to mention the frequency with which unarmed black men and women are killed by police, they're criticized for overreacting or dismissed by some as playing the victims. Think of the reaction of any Jew you know being told, "Ah, the Holocaust was a long time ago. Get over it already." Is it any wonder that black folks are frustrated over the disrespect of their history and the challenges they face in our current culture? And yet I think it was probably the statement that Black Lives Matter more than any of the others on our banner that led to it being slashed and vandalized this week. When I got word that our banner had been slashed, I wasn't surprised. in our current culture of division and mistrust. It made perfect sense. This is the way people who are afraid behave, with violence. My mind immediately jumped to the tribulations that Amos must have faced being a prophet to a people who were living in a bubble of extravagance and denial of reality. Right before our passage today, he directs his ire to the wealthy women of Israel and says, "Listen up, you cows! You oppress the poor, you crush the needy, you say to your husbands, 'Bring us more wine.'" Not exactly PC, but he's losing his temper here with people whose status in the culture have totally isolated them from the majority of the people. It's time to say it again. Most of us who are white in America have the luxury of ignoring the everyday struggles of our Black neighbors. Over and over, in large ways and small, the message is hammered into their heads. You don't matter. Your well-being doesn't matter. Your life doesn't matter. So to say Black Lives Matter does not mean that other lives are valued less. It just means that there is a group of people who for years have been undervalued and exploited, and it's time we stop. This means that many people of goodwill face the hard task of recognizing that these societal ills continue to exist, and that even though we wish it didn't and would not have asked for it, white privilege continues to exist. Likewise with the other statements on our We Believe banner. Women's rights are human rights. Jesus depended on women as part of his entourage and support system. He spoke out in defense of women and spoke out against the unjust treatment of women. The passages in the New Testament that dictate secondary roles for women are reactionary responses to Paul's radical inclusion of women. The Wesleyan and Methodist movements have, granted in fits and starts, empowered women in leadership, fought for women's suffrage, for just wages, and defended reproductive rights. No human is illegal. Immigration is broken in our country. The system needs to be overhauled with both compassion and a sense of responsibility for our having broken other countries' political and economic systems. Referring to people as illegal is intentionally derogatory and dehumanizing. Not to mention, many of the immigrants being mistreated in our system are fellow Christians. Science is real. Fundamentalist Christians are ignorant of the origin of the Bible. They defend parables from the Bible as history and deny scientific fact as a tenet of faith. During the pandemic, some pastors have encouraged their followers to opt for faith in Jesus over wearing a mask. This not only endangers others, but I have it on good authority that it embarrasses Jesus. Love is love. How simple is that? Despite what some say to defend their prejudice, homosexuality, as we understand it today, is actually not mentioned in the Bible. Christians who do not affirm and accept their LGBTQ neighbors are responsible for untold psychological, spiritual, and in many cases, physical harm being done to people. Kindness is everything. Jesus says, "Love one another as I have loved you. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you." In 1 Corinthians 12, Paul speaks of the body of Christ and all its many parts. He then goes out of his way to say, "Those parts of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable, and the parts that we think are less honorable, we treat with special honor." You can't go wrong with being kind to one another. Speaking in the midst of his neighbors in his hometown of Nazareth, Jesus said, "The Spirit of the Lord has sent me to preach good news to the poor, to proclaim release to the prisoners and recovery of sight to the blind, and to liberate the oppressed." And far from being thrilled with such a prospect, the people were so uncomfortable with what Jesus said that they ran him out of town and tried to push him off of a cliff. Yet Jesus' words serve as the mission for anyone who aspires to be his follower, to be empathetic and compassionate with one another, and wherever possible, to restore that which is wrong in society and to right the balance of things. Now, that may all sound pretty good until Amos reminds us that not everybody got the memo. He says, "They hate the one who reproves in the gate. They abhor the one who speaks the truth. They afflict the righteous. They take a bribe and they push aside the needy in the gate, for it is an evil time." And what's the solution? Amos puts it pretty plainly. "Seek good and not evil, that you may live." And for me, seeking that good includes standing up for the core values that Jesus stood for: justice, kindness, compassion, and love. As your pastor, I hope you've heard me say loud and clear, over and over again, that no matter what you go through in this life, you are loved and that you matter. When we say Black Lives Matter, it's not saying that white lives don't matter, like there's only so much love and justice to go around. We're acknowledging that until Black people know justice, no one will know justice. And the same goes for every element on our banner. We aren't there yet. We aren't where Jesus' vision would have us be. Our beliefs aspire to creating a world that we aren't living in yet. Our opening song was about dreaming God's dream. And I hope that, along with Dr. King, you can share the dream of coming to a day when not only Black Lives Matter, but women's rights are human rights. No human is illegal. Science is real. Love is love. And kindness is everything. That day is possible, but there's still a lot of work to do. And that work begins by not only being clear about what our values are, but also not being threatened into inaction. In so many ways, our society is at a crossroads. The healing of our country and the future of civil society depends on those of us who are able to most clearly articulate what it means to put love first in the world. It's just a banner, but its existence was met with fear and violence, a minor skirmish in the broader scheme of things. But dedicated to putting love first, and with a commitment to continue working for justice, we've ordered not just one, but two new banners. So when the next one is vandalized, we'll be ready to replace it right away, along with a message to the vandals that they're going to get tired of trying to destroy our message before we get tired of proclaiming it. So, with an unyielding resolve to seek good and leave no room for evil, may we continue to put love first in the world. Be well.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.